podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don Neely view system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Welcome to another episode of the Nina Kaiser Show. Can you hear that smile? I am grinning ear to ear. Not because it was a great performance, not because we smashed some team 8-0. It's just nice to see Liverpool winning after what felt like a loss last week to me personally. A clean sheet, two loads of positives. And to ensure that we get 3 points, I had to pull out the aces, all the stops. That gif came out again, the avian one from Rocky, and followed up with my ace in terms of a podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Mr. Cuzzy. Cuzzy, welcome back.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Back to winning ways.
It should have been 8-0.
It should have. But we'll get to that. We will get to that. And yeah. Joining Cuzzy, I'm delighted to have you back on, Cuzzy. And joining Cuzzy, it is the host of the Reds Review podcast and the Champions League preview podcast. It's Mr. Andy Wales.
Hello, in better mood today.
I know, much, much love for you because you're from the, you know, you're from the northeast as well for obvious reasons.
gone great, ideally.
Oh gosh. Okay, right, guys, we have three amazing callers, familiar voices on the Nina Kaiser Show, people that I rate highly as well. So you know what? We're going to go straight to them. And our first caller is Stephen Balogun. You can follow him on Twitter at Stephen Balogun from London. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Good evening, Nina. How are you?
You know what? It's just nice to win. Simple as yeah. that.
Yes, indeed. Indeed it is. I tend to try to be a bit more balanced about losses and draws and victories, but today's a good day, as one of my gifts that I've got says, you know, Man United lost and Liverpool won. What more could you ask for?
I think that has added to my smugness, you know, but I was trying to dodge it, you know, just trying to focus it on Liverpool. But yeah, great weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's always a good weekend when the Reds win. But just that added bonus, it's just the cherry on top, really.
Absolutely. And Steve, at what points and thoughts would you like to share from the game with the panel?
Yeah, so, you know, it's around the rhetoric around certain players around the team. And obviously, we're going to talk about today's performance. And a guy that I just think deserves a mention is Lloris Karius. I think he put in quite a, you know, solid performance today, which I think actually builds on that'll be the second in a row of solid performances. So, you know, I'm very, very happy to say I think he dealt with everything quite well. And actually, he had a hand in the goal that we that we scored, because his quick thinking and quick distribution of the ball actually led to, you know, us being on the counter from a position where we were defending. So, you know, and that's something that I think is actually very important for our team. And that kind of decisiveness should be celebrated.
You know what? Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Brilliant points. I don't think I can add any more to that. So I'm going to go to Cuzzy first. Cuzzy, your thoughts on Carrie's performance. And it's also worth noting as well, you know, when we went 1-0 up and we decided to kind of fall asleep a little and the Saints came on to us a wee bit, I felt like his concentration was, you know, it could have easily been 1-0 at that point. You know, and he held his own pretty well, I thought. So I want to get your thoughts on Karius' performance today. I think he's a bit of an unsung hero. I think Stephen's absolutely spot on to highlight his performance today.
It definitely is the type of goalkeeping performance you want from a team that's being dominant. He didn't have much to do, but what he had to do, he did really well. I can't remember too many mistakes. The general performance was good, but, you know, that save was big. At 1-0, the ball goes over Robertson's head, and, you know, I'm thinking that this is a definite goal, but he pulls out a really good save. Some people would say he should have saved it, but, you know, he's positioned well and he makes the stop, which is the most important thing. He's alive to it and he's alert. No errors, keeps the ball out the net. And that was, the biggest moment for me. You know, mentioned his decisiveness in starting the move for the goal, and that's really good. It's funny that, because it's one of the things I've been critical of him about. Not that he doesn't distribute the ball quickly, but there's been times where we've been under the cosh and we need the team to have a bit of a breather, and he's thrown or kicked the ball straight out and we've been back under the cosh. It's definitely something that's advantageous for us when we're trying to dominate, when we want to catch a team out on a counter attack. So in that respect, that was really good. And I'm glad he's got sort of a hand in the goal there. But I did notice that in the second half, when we were looking to slow it down, when it was like last 10 minutes, he was taking his time. You know, he wasn't in a rush to start moves. So it was situational awareness there. And I think he's sort of growing into the team. And I think it's good to have Van Dijk and him in the side. He needs to play every game. And I think Van Dijk makes his job easier because he's got a leader there in front of him. But no, he's for a guy who's had, I think, some unfair criticism. You know, it's just gone way over the top. I think in some of his performances, you know, the sort of analysis that he's had against him has been a bit OTT. I mean, he's made errors. He's played badly in the past, but you know what goalkeeper hasn't. I just think that he needs, you know, if he was a British keeper, young keeper, then he would have a lot more sort of benefit of the doubt. But being new into the league, there's always going to be this question mark, especially with the Mignolet situation as well. I don't think it's helped that Klopp has been a bit indecisive on who should be the number one. I don't think that's helped either. But yeah, I'm glad now he's the number one and he's getting his chance, getting a long run, and I think he's doing well. So long may it continue.
Absolutely, and I love the fact that you highlighted Van Dijk there as well, because remember Van Dijk's first game and Karius looked really unsure because, you know, he had a defender that was kind of communicating with him and he looked a little unsure as to what he should claim, what the defender should clear. So I think the more they're playing, the understanding is definitely there. Andy, I'm going to come to you. I think, you know, Karius has had a few good games for us when he's been given the opportunity to present himself as a Liverpool number one, but always been overshadowed by us leaking and conceding stupid goals. It's so nice to finally have a clean sheet and he actually play well. And your thoughts on Karius' performance? And he's got to start, Annie, in the Champions League. He's got to be our number one.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think Cousy got it absolutely spot on when he said, you know, when we needed him, he performed today. You know, he wasn't needed all that much, but when he was called upon, he did what he was required to do really well. That save, the one-on-one, he came out quickly, spread himself, made himself big. That's all you can ask from a goalkeeper in them situations, and he did that. He blocked that. There was also the shot in the second half, was it? Was that the first half where he tipped it over the bar? It was a really good save from a shot from somewhere around the edge of the box. So, yeah, I think it was a good performance. Last week we gave him man of the match and, you know, he put in a good performance. This week, pretty much flawless. I mean, if you're going to be really, really picky, you'd say there was an iffy punch in there and there was an overthrow. That was it. And that has been really picky. Yeah, and compared to the sloppiness,
he's costing £80 million if you're nitpicking like that.
Well, that's it. I mean, you look around the rest of the players on the pitch today, and there was a lot of sloppiness in possession, and I'm sure we'll cover all of that. But I thought he was flawless, pretty much. You know, he pulled out the saves. He was quick. He was decisive. He came out. He cleared the ball, or he just recycled it well. You know, it's. I think what he's probably thriving upon, not just, and as you echoed, you know, a really good point from Cousy as well, is having Van Dijk there and actually starting to build up that understanding now, rather than their first game together, oh my God, look at that, you know, one doesn't know what the other one's doing, is I think just building up that confidence level of consistent game time, playing week in, week out, game in, game out, and he needs that, I think, rather than coming in, playing a game, not playing again for another 2-3 weeks in, and it doesn't help. It doesn't help either
match,
of them.
Match sharpness as well. Goalkeepers need it as well.
No, exactly, yeah. I don't think it helped any of the goalkeepers, and I don't think it helped the defence in front of them either. You know, that understanding that they build up, where they know it almost becomes that second nature that we have in some of the forward play, is they know how the other one is thinking. And it is different between Karius and Mignolet. Their thought processes are different. What they do, their instincts, the natural instincts, especially in how they come off the line and get the ball and use the ball, they're very, very different. So there's bound to be differences there. So, yeah, I think he'll benefit from the game time. He'll benefit from a settled defence. And obviously confidence will benefit from performances like today. He was absolutely spot on. You know, we said, keep him in the sticks now till the end of the season. This is his opportunity to make, you know, to stake his claim for his Liverpool future. He's got between now and the end of the season to nail down and say, you know what, you don't need to go out and buy another goalkeeper in the summer. I can do this. And today was a positive step for him.
Absolutely. I'm going to go back to Stephen now. Stephen, you've heard what the lads have said about Karius. I pretty much echo what you thought as well. So it's great that we're all on the same wavelength, that, you know, he doesn't get enough praise when it's due. I believe you have another question for us.
Yeah, so this might be an inverse one. And, you know, I was listening to the Under Pressure podcast, and I think it was Darth who mentioned something about the echo chamber around rhetoric. And I thoroughly believe that this happens around Robertson, who, first and foremost, I want to preface what I'm about to say by saying that any player that puts on a LFC shirt has my support. And I hope that they all perform well, and push each other so that we have competition for places. And I think we genuinely have that now in left back position. And I wanted to talk about Robertson and his contrasting performance in the first half versus the second half, where I thought he was actually really good and made better decisions. But in the first half, he was culpable for some mistakes, or some losses in concentration, should I say, that could have led to goals. And luckily for him, Karius was, as we've already mentioned, on top form. And, you know, he fell asleep a couple of times on that back stick, and that led to opportunities. Now, if a well-known Spaniard left-back had made those same errors, I could pretty much predict what the headlines would be, you know, despite the win, and what the focus would be on the after-game analysis. You know, he would be getting lambasted. People would be, you know, talking about him in not very positive terms. But it seems when Robertson does these things, nobody picks up on it. But really, where I got a bit frustrated with him in the first half was in his so-called quality deliveries into the box, which, you know, the commentators on a well-known TV station that was showing the game, you know, were waxing lyrical about what great balls they were into the box. And actually, I disagree, because there was a one sublime pass from Firmino, which set him free on the left, when he made a very good overlapping run. And he had time to pick someone up, pick someone in the box, pick out a player and make a great sort of cross pass. And he just absolutely smashed it. Yes, into a channel, which is a danger area, but we don't have a fox in the box. We don't play that kind of game. So that, for me, that ball was pointless. What he could have done was picked out Mane's run, who'd ran into a channel and then stopped his run and was actually looking for a pullback, which would have led to a opportunity, a shot or something. And I just feel like sometimes he gets down that channel and he just, you know, without real strategy or thought, plays these balls in which look great, but don't actually go to anyone. And he did that on a number of occasions in the first half, and it started to frustrate me because, you know, the one time where, you know, someone got out wide there and didn't just put a ball into the box and actually paused and then retained possession, it led to the second goal, when Mane was out there and, you know, he tried to set Ronaldo up for the shot, which was blocked, picked it up again and just recycled the ball. And the point I want to make is that you know, we don't want to be just knocking balls into the box. We want to be, you know, having a plan, an approach, a strategy in terms of you're trying to pick out a man. You're not just knocking a percentage ball into the penalty area. I mean, if you look at Man City, who have got to be the benchmark for everyone right now, there's no sort of hopeful cross. Every ball that goes into that penalty area is aimed for someone. It's targeted at picking out a player. And I think longer gone the days where you play that percentage pass and you're looking for that big center forward like Kane or, you know, the other guy we spent £35 million on, Carroll, you know, to get on the end of it. That's not football anymore. And I think, you know, he gets away with that quite a lot. And I was critical of it, but in the second half, credit where it's due. I think maybe someone may have had a word at halftime because it seemed that he retained possession better in those positions and was a bit more patient in his approach and what he was trying to do. And I'd be interested to know what the panel thought of that.
You know what? First of all, it's a great point. And I actually thought in terms of crossing, I was actually more impressed with Trent Alexander-Arnold, but maybe that's just a personal thing. Cozy, I'm going to come to you. I think Stephen's highlight some excellent points, and basically the performance analysis that Stephen just pretty much gave us and what we witnessed was pretty much peak Moreno, in a sense that defensively a little questionable, attacking wise great, but kind of lacked a little bit of purpose. And had Moreno put in that kind of performance or that kind of shift, everyone would have been absolutely slating him. You know, there is a sense of like some kind of bias.
There definitely is. And I think for Moreno, it's because of the howlers that we've had from him in previous seasons. So this, the tolerance level for him is zero. He has very little margin for error. It's a bit like Karius, for example. If he makes a mistake, he's hounded. If we were to buy, say we used to spend £100 million on a brand new keeper who has an excellent reputation and he put in a few dodgy performances, we'd be a bit cautious in criticising him because, you know, we'd give him that benefit of the doubt. It's a similar thing with Karius, and it's a similar thing with Moreno. Sorry, you know, he makes mistakes, is going to get pounced on because of what's happened before. Robertson doesn't really have that baggage at the moment. He's not made massive howlers. He's been steady. You know, his performances, he has a handful of really, really good performances. I say the majority of performances has been kind of average. But without those howlers, he's not really going to get sort of slaughtered as a Moreno usually is. Yeah, I thought he made a few mistakes today. He seemed to misjudge the flight a few times. It seems to be a bit of a habit that all of our fullbacks have, to be honest. Klein isn't really good in the air. Gomez has made a number of mistakes where he's misjudged the flight and we've conceded. Robertson did so today. We didn't concede, but, you know, that shot that Carrier saved is come from his mistake. It might sound harsh, but I thought he misread that. It was right over his head. I think our fullbacks lack nous as well going forward. Moreno is probably the best footballer of the fullbacks, and I'm not including Trent because Trent's a young player, so I'm going to set him aside a little bit. But the other three that we've got, so Klein, Moreno, and Robertson, I'd say Moreno's probably the better footballer of the three. They lack nous, and some of the sort of in-game stuff you'd expect to do, and it's a really good point about just thrashing the ball across the face of the area, and you know the commentators and the crowd think it's a really good ball in, but really it's not gone to anyone. So it's been ineffective, and that's something we get quite a lot. It's really frustrating. There's been a few games now where Robertson has had really good chances to sort of create a chance, and it's not come off. Today. That one where he put the ball in the 6-yard box across the goal, and he had both commentators, both Martin Tyler and Alan Smith, waxing lyrical about it, saying, you know, he's entitled to have a striker in the end of that. I disagree. You know, we had two Liverpool players there in space in the middle of the penalty area, not far out, and it's an easy pass if you look up and you actually play the pass rather than just playing the percentage, you know, kick across the goal mouth. And it's funny, it's a bit of a paradox, because I say play in the percentage, but with our strikers, with the nature of our play, the likelihood is if you thrash the ball across the face of the box is that no one's ever going to be on the end of it, because it's not really the sort of football we play. So, you know, the better percentage would be to actually lift your head, look at where the players are and feed the passing rather than just kicking it across the goal. So, yeah, I hope he learns from that and starts, you know, doing better in that position. It is a frustration. It was a bit better in the second half. It was a bit more patient. But again, I still had frustrations in the second half as well. But there was an occasion where he was running with the ball. Salah was in front of him with space. He didn't play the pass early. He was dribbling, and then he made a pass that wasn't great, and then the sort of the move fizzled out. So I'm quite harsh on fullbacks because I think they are key to being a really top side, winning things. I think most teams that win the big trophies have excellent fullbacks, and ours, I think, just as I said earlier, lack that nous. I think they, you know, not great defending and not great going forward either. It's sort of, we've got some, there's some average quality there, I think. And and as I said as well, I'm setting Trent aside because he's a kid and we don't really know what his best position is either. So I'm not going to sort of rate him as such yet. He's only 19. And some people think he's better in midfield anyway. You made a point earlier that his crosses look better. I think they do. They definitely look better on the eye. But again, we don't really get many goals from crosses. So are they worth it? Is it worth actually just putting the ball in from the fullback area? I remember Arbeloa, when we had him in the 08-09 season, and he hardly ever crossed the ball. He'd always receive it, cut inside, play sort of 1-2s with the midfield players or attacking players in and around him. And we'd create chances, but they just wouldn't come from crosses from his side, you know. If it's really unlikely that you're going to find a teammate to in a goal scoring position, then why play the cross? You know, it looks good. It makes the crowd go, ooh, but really, is it worth it? And I think the actual stats on how many crosses are converted into goals are very, very low as well. So it's something to keep in mind. But I definitely agree with the point. The fullbacks for me are frustrating, and that definitely includes Robertson.
Excellent points from both of you there. And I think, you know, the fact that you kind of highlighted that crossing can be a little pointless. I think Stephen made the point earlier as well that we actually don't have a target man. We don't have like a Benteke or a Carroll. If we were Aston Villa, it would have been absolutely fine. And I'm going to move on now to Andy. Andy, your thoughts on Robertson and just the fullbacks in general, because one thing that I think fullbacks are absolutely key in is opening up the play, widening the space of the pitch. They've certainly been pretty decent, I'd say, all season. I feel like, you know, Mo Salah and Mane certainly benefit from that as well, especially when teams kind of try playing the low block. I know that wasn't the case today, but your thoughts on Robertson?
Yeah, I think he's improved. So his defensive game has been pretty solid. He was a bit in and out today. I agree with what Stephen has said. Yeah, today he was a bit in and out. And his attacking play, I mean, initially when he came into the team, you know, that's all he was doing. It was almost like first time bang, cross, 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 cross. And I'd rather have Robertson crossing than Milner, I've got to say. Last season it was Milner endlessly hitting crosses into the box, which he's just an awful crosser of the ball. But yeah, Trent certainly delivers a much better cross of the ball. But it's, I think what Cuzzy was saying, you know, you've got to pick your times. When's the right moment? Who's there? What's the right area? And Trent, if the option's there, Trent can deliver them. You know, his quality of ball, it's got the curl and the curve on it. He whips them in lovely. So it's about picking your times. And Robertson has really got to vary his game a lot more. I think he'd improved on that, and then he seems to have kind of regressed. And it does seem a bit more hopeful. I mean, they were talking about, like, in the first half, that, you know, where Robertson, yeah, got caught underneath it, and that was that the chance for Højbjerg. That cross came over from the other side of the pitch, where Trent's not getting close enough to his man, and I felt that was, you know, as well as Robertson getting caught under the ball a couple of times, you know, and this has been a consistent weakness for us in the fullback area. Is you know, you cross to the far post, and you can easily get over our fullbacks. Is we've got to get tighter. We've got to cut out that supply as well. And yeah, it was kind of, you know, symptomatic today that our fullbacks they're a bit in and out. You know, they have good moments and they have poor moments where we don't get tight enough. We get caught underneath it defensively. Then other times the 1v1s were pretty good. We nail them. You know, we do some nice little interplay. We carry the ball. We take it up well. We create some width. We make the overlaps. And then it's the delivery. Then it's the what Cuzzy was saying, you know, the judgment, you know, making the right call, making the right decision about what, you know, when to play the ball, where to play the ball, or do you do you cut it back, let someone else, you know, change the angle on it? And that's the thing. We're still not quite there, but I suppose it's hard to be too sour, because we got through it, didn't we? It's, you know, we can be really picky on lots of different things, but yeah, I think there's pointers there for us to learn from, and hopefully we'll make sure we don't repeat some of those mistakes come Wednesday night.
Absolutely. Fair points there, Andy. And I'm going to come back to Steve and let him have his final thoughts on what you guys have said before we let him go. Stephen, your thoughts on what the lads have said?
Yeah, no, absolutely spot on. And, you know, take what Andy says. Definitely, you know, the overall outcome is, it's been a positive one today. I'm a bit of a devil's advocate, aren't I? And I see there's inconsistency in the rhetoric around some players, and it annoys me, because a person who likes consistency in, you know, in opinions, and, you know, I see players like get away with certain things when other players don't. And for me, the overall thing is they all wear a Liverpool shirt. So shouldn't we just feel equally supportive of them all? But, you know, we get caught up in our emotions sometimes. I can understand that. I mean, another example could be last week with, I don't think it was a penalty, but, you know, Van Dijk kicked out. If Lovren had done that, internet would have exploded. And it's just like, it's about time that we kind of come back to the core that they're all Liverpool players. And whilst they've got that shirt on, we're going to get enough abuse from rival fans. We're going to get, you know, the pundits against us, and you're going to get the media with their angle on it. But our jobs as fans, first and foremost, is to, you know, offer these guys support. You know, and there's nothing wrong with analysis, but it's got to be balanced, and, you know, consistent. And yes, that's it, really. But I like to leave it on a positive note, and that's that. It's a great victory. We've turned the pressure on the Manx. We've kept ourselves ahead of Spurs, who seem to be on a run at the moment. You know, and we've got to keep that consistency going. And I actually think when you look at the whole season as a whole, we've actually been pretty consistent this year. Compared to last year, or last season, should I say. You know, and if we can put together another run of games as we did when we went 18 unbeaten, then, you know, that would be just fantastic and would see us through to being in that top four. I actually think we'll finish second. That's my prediction.
I love it, Stephen. Love your positivity. Really appreciate that. We're going to let you go now. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Hopefully enjoy
thank
the
week. And yeah, thank you very much.
You're buzzing as well.
Yes, and congratulations on the 10 years, I think it is, of Anfield Index, isn't it? So
seven.
Well done, guys.
7, don't age us, we're only 7 years old.
7, okay. But, you know, congratulations on that. It's a great deal of work, and you guys keep me sane, because if I listen to just the pundits on TV and elsewhere, I'd lose my mind. You actually talk sense, so thank you very much.
Oh, I really appreciate it. And of course, you guys coming on to this show and sharing your thoughts keep me sane as well. I get closure from results pretty quick. So thank you, Stephen.
Okay. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So that was Stephen Balogun kicking off the caller segment on this Nina Kowser show. We're going to move on to our second caller, AI Pro subscriber, a familiar voice, a bit of a legend on the Nina Kowser show. And welcoming back Kwesi Davis. Welcome back, Kwesi.
Yeah, man, what a welcome, Nina. Thank you so much for that.
An absolute pleasure. Well, Kwesi, I'd love to hear your thoughts. What would you like to share with the panel today?
Well, I wanted to first mention my thoughts on the whole game and then ask a question. And by the way, I must say that Stephen, I found him a very, very insightful caller.
Mm-hmm.
And I take to heart what he said about a man wearing the Liverpool shirt and treating them with a certain degree of respect.
Mm-hmm.
It has annoyed me all season how we've treated some players. Even somebody like Ox, I thought, was badly treated when he, you know, the first couple of games when he was getting used to the team. Moreno is horribly treated. And look, I almost cried after the Basel final, you know, and I blame him for a lot of that. But every time he puts on the shirt and every tackle that he makes that is clean, and every time he clearly decides to throw in the brain fart behaviour, I applaud him, and I think he's our best left back right now, based on what I've seen with him at his best and Robertson at their best. So I want to say that yes, Stephen was spot on about certain things. I think that movement between Robertson and Mane, just, you know, that we use these wide pivots is pretty important for us, especially on the left side, since Gomez starts on the right, and he has a brief that basically tells him not to overlap, not to hit the corner flag, to tuck in and sometimes make a three when we're going forward. So it's really, really important that Robertson and Mane get it right, and sometimes they don't. And it's not only Robertson's fault, sometimes it's Sadio's fault as well. But at least, on the other hand, they defend better on that side as a team than the two on the right, Salah and whoever is playing on the right side. Right, anything else I wanted to mention about the game? I thought Matip had a good game. I wanted to mention him since a lot of people were saying, oh, well, you know, we have Lovren playing well and he plays well on the right. He does. But then Matip, except for a poor tackle to get the yellow card, did what I call the Sarko pass for the second goal. That is, you know, you have a central defender who looks up, doesn't take the easy route and knock it to the fullback, plays it into feet on the edge of the box. It used to be Sarko, Coutinho all the time, but now, you know, we have Matip and Firmino stepping up, and I thought the passing was wonderful for that goal. So I need to kind of comment Matip on that.
Yeah, and what's your question?
Yeah, sure, sorry.
It's okay.
So it was about the referee, because I thought he was real, real inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't, again, like the Tottenham match, you couldn't really tell what level of contact he was allowing. And it's ridiculous. So Firmino, for instance, to me, won a clear penalty. I mean, the guy had his left hand around his neck. Then he'll move the left hand and put his right hand around his shoulder and pull him down. And remember what I was saying last week about degrees of contact, and if a player feels like he's being impeded, notwithstanding the fact that if he really, really wanted to, he could have stayed on his feet. If he feels whatever he's trying to do on the ball will not work because somebody is tearing off his shirt, then in my mind, he has all rights to go down. But if he does like Lamella, where there is no way the contact changed whatever the flow of the game was, the bounce of the ball, everything, the contact was incidental to the flow of the game, and Lamella just went down anyway. I mean, that's cheating. So I felt like we got it. We're not getting the rubber green from the refs. I saw Manchester United commit a foul in the box today. Penalty. Clear penalty. And nobody paid it any attention. So, yes, I wanted to know from the panel what they thought of the referee's consistency level today.
Great question. And luckily, they didn't take too much of the headlines this time, did they, Andy? Your thoughts on the Firmino one? Because I think Questy's made a really great point there. It's all about the level of content and intent. And the one on Firmino, the defender in question actually made no attempt of even playing the ball. He was just all about just putting his hands all over Roberto Firmino.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Look, we don't like players to go down. But the fact is that players go down because if they don't go down when they're fouled, they don't get the decision. We've seen that earlier in the season. There have been two or three instances where players stayed on their feet after being fouled and the decision is not given. So we have a number of referees who make decisions based on reactions. And we've seen that with, a Jonathan Moss last week. I've seen him. He is a referee who will give cards based on the reaction of the outcome rather than the actual offence.
Mm.
It was a foul on Firmino, without a shadow of a doubt. It was a foul. He was pulled on the shoulder. I think what didn't help Firmino was his... it's his exaggeration, the way that he threw his legs. What happened? It didn't look like a natural fall. Mm. You know, it looked too exaggerated. And I think that's just simply what's gone against him. And that shouldn't really impact it, because if the offence is committed, then the offence is committed, regardless of, you know, whether the player makes a meal of it or doesn't. If that offence has been committed and it's a foul, then it's a foul. So it's almost like the chicken and the egg, isn't it? You know, what comes first? And it's, you know, players don't help referees, but then, you know, referees are making decisions based on reactions, so they're not helping the players. And this whole, you know, reactions and diving and everything, you know, it's just become part of the game now, unfortunately. But as for Martin Atkinson, I thought he had a very inconsistent game. I'll be honest, when I see Martin Atkinson referee, I tend to feel he's quite cowardly in that he doesn't like to rock the boat. He doesn't like to make contentious decisions. He likes to be very, very safe. And, you know, take that how you may. There was a couple of instances. I thought the Emre Can's yellow card was a slightly odd decision. I felt that he actually got the ball. Yeah. There was the foul given against Trent Alexander-Arnold towards the end, where Tadic just I'm not quite sure what he did. He kind of swung a leg and then threw himself to the floor and got a free kick. And that was the thing, you know, that kind of reaction and exaggeration with no contact, let alone minimal contact, gets a free kick. But because it's not in the area, it's safer and it's easier to give a free kick when you're not 100% certain, or if you're not quite 100% convinced. Yet for the exact same incident, the same occurrence in the box, and a referee will not make the same decision. So it's, I can understand, yeah, people get frustrated by referees who will give a tackle outside the box because it's a free kick and they don't feel like it's going to come back and bite them, yet they will not give it for the same thing in the box because that would mean it's a penalty and it feels more impactful and there's more scrutiny involved in it. So maybe that's just that the pressure referees are under, but I feel that the general standard of refereeing in the Premier League has been declining for you know, probably the last 3, 4, 5 years. And yeah, I don't think he was particularly awful today, but I think what Quezzy mentioned was a good point, in that it's difficult to read because some tackles are given okay, yet in other instances, the same tackle is a free kick, you know, and no contact can be a free kick, but, you know, contact then isn't a free kick. And it's hard for players and it's hard for fans to read and quite digest exactly what, you know, what is his standards here in terms of what he'll give and what he won't.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to come to Cozy now. Cozy, I kind of saw you tweet that, you know, you thought it was a penalty. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the decision and just the officiating in general, because I think both of Cressy and Andy have made some great points there. It's the inconsistency. If you're going to blow at everything, then blow at everything. If you're going to let things go, then hold that line.
Yeah, I think Andy made some really good points that hit the nail on the head, I thought. It's funny because when live pitches, I thought it was a dive. And then when I saw the replay, I thought, oh, that's a definite penalty. And that's when I sent the tweet. If a player does dive, and I understand exactly why they dive, and Andy's made the point there, if you stay on your feet, likelihood is you won't get a decision. So players go down. Fair enough. I think that's fair enough. It's where the theatrics are involved, and it looks unnatural. If a referee doesn't see the full all phases of the foul or perceived foul, and only sees the reaction, so he sees Firmino throw himself to the ground, he's probably going to think to himself, no, it's a dive, and not give it. And I've got a theory on why the standard of refereeing looks like it's declining over the last few years. And I it's my own personal theory that as the game gets quicker, the referees, I think, are guessing more of the decisions. Because I think it's impossible to pick up on everything that's going on the pitch. It's so fast. There's one guy out there in the middle and he has to see all these things. And I'm sure some of the decisions he's guessing, I'm sure of it. And I'm even more sure of it after the that decision at Spurs where John Moss has a conversation with his linesman and he says he didn't know if Lovren touched the ball. That told me that, you know, the referees miss a lot because he's looking right at the Lovren incident. And if he can't see that Lovren makes contact with that ball, then I think there's a lot referees are missing during the game. And I think a lot of the decisions are calculated guesses. And, you know, I don't know how you get around that if you have more than one referee on the pitch or what. I don't know.
I've got an idea. Get them hoverboards and make them do fitness tests because half of them look really unfit as well.
Yeah. You have to be really, really, really fit. And I don't know. It's a tough one because from their position, I mean, for a linesman, right, for example, I don't know how they can tell when something is offside or not, because a lot of the times the ball goes across so quickly, and to be looking at one phase of play and then immediately lift your eyes to look at another phase of play, I don't know, for me it just looks like a bit of an impossible job, to be honest. I am not surprised that mistakes get made. You're right though, and Chris made the point, and Andy, the inconsistency is what frustrates all of us. Because you get yellow cards for some tackles and you see exactly the same tackle again and then no yellow cards given. And it generally across the board, it's like that. I tend to not get as frustrated as I used to. I kind of expect the poor level now, which is bad in itself, but that's what it's come to. And I hardly ever go into a game these days and expecting the referee to have a good game. There's always a number of decisions that you see that you just shake your head at.
Can I just come in there? Cause see, I watched the Fiorentina versus Juventus game this weekend, and there was a penalty given, and the Fiorentina player lined up, put the ball on the spot. He was ready to take it, but then they took it to VAR. You know, they wanted to get video replay of it, and there was a massive delay. And you know what? The referee overruled it and gave it, because the player was offside in question. Pretty very similar to kind of what happened with, you know, the Spurs scenario. But the referee actually had the balls to overrule himself and gave the free kick to Juventus, to Buffon to take it. And a lot of people were like, that's messing up the game. That's screwing up the game. But to me, honestly, he got it spot on. He got it wrong first time. He then went back and he rectified it. And the player was offside, spot on.
I'd prefer to have the correct decision and maybe waste a few more minutes. What is ridiculous is when they use the VAR for every single incident or a lot of incidents.
My only criticism of that scenario, that specific scenario was instead of giving the penalty, go to your video footage, because that player had been stood on that spot for so long he was going to miss because there's psychological pressure building up there.
He
could have corrected that. That was my only criticism of the referee. Like, don't award the penalty, go to your footage first and then decide.
I think with the VAR it will get better. You know, it's new to everyone, and you know, the process is a new. I think it will get more slick, and it shouldn't, and you know, deciding when and when not to use it and how long decisions take and all that sort of stuff should iron out. It should get better. I'm a fan of it, and I think it should be introduced to the Premier League. But maybe the process needs to be better first before they introduce it, and the Champions League as well. If they had it in today's game, what would the decision be? Because I don't think it was a howler as such. You know, we think it was a penalty, but if that went to a video ref, letter of the law, would that definitely have been a penalty kick? I don't know. Probably. But for some decisions, you're still going to get, you know, you're still going to get a bit of controversy, because what it does rule out is the absolute howler. And, you know, I think we can all accept tight decisions. It's when the absolute howlers get missed is when we're all fuming. You know. Well, you know, to answer the question, I think both Quezzy and Andy made really good points. It's just the way it's going. I think as the game gets faster, the refereeing does seem to be poorer. But you're right, you make a good point yourself with the fitness tests. We need to get some really, you know, some on the ball fit referees that can actually keep up with the game. And I think the decisions will probably be a bit more consistent.
No, I think that's an excellent point itself. The fact that, you know, the game is getting quicker, you know, something I didn't even think about. I just thought the quality had just dropped, but great theory there. Cressy, I'll let you have the final word before we let you go on what you've heard from the lads.
Yeah, yes. Good points from both Cozzy and Andy. About the VAR, I'm with Cozzy. If we get the right decision, that's all that really, really matters. I especially, and I also think it shouldn't be used for everything, but for offside and penalty decisions, those especially, I think, have been the ones that have gone wrong so many times. I remember last season at White Hart Lane, I thought, you know, we played a great game. And we deserve to win that game. Eh? It was a really tough Tottenham side in good form. And Mane, I think, scored at the very end, or, you know, it would have given us a 3-2 victory. And they called Lallana offside, and it was the wrong decision. Lallana was in line. Games like that, you lose 2 points just for nothing, just because some linesman is having an off day. And there are digital equipment that can actually do this. I mean, if you look, for instance, at that thing they use in tennis that makes a sound the moment the ball touches outside, right? Or even the Hawkeye in cricket. I mean, this thing could be fairly automatic. And what really should happen with VAR and offside is that every time a player is ahead of the ball, you know, put a microchip in the ball so you can, when the ball is struck, you hear it and the timing is precise, whatever. But every time the attacking player is ahead of the last defender, a light should go off. And then now the referees on the field can decide whether the player was involved in play, whether he was interrupting play. They can make decisions like the fact saying that Lovren, the ball barely feathering against Lovren's ankle, is actually another phase of play, which I found ridiculous. But anyway, they can make those decisions on the ground. Computers can't do that. We need human beings to do that. That's fine. But the offside decision itself, as to whether a player was ahead of the last defender, should never be left to somebody's eye. It should be some sort of automatic. I mean, they have, what you call it, in track and field, the photo finish sort of thing. Computers can do that with ease. They can measure the few inches. And the rest, you know, we can leave to the referees. All right, so that's VAR. I really love Gini's game today. It was an away performance. And I, for one, think that most of the time when he's away from home, the reason he does, he looks sort of out of it is that he's covering space. Like Chan is tearing up the field and dribbling up the field, and he's the one who has to cover for all of these guys. And I think that's why he finds himself out of the game. Luckily today for him, he was in the game. I thought he had a good game. Stephen mentioned that he thinks we're going to get second place. I agree with him. I think we would have been nailed on for second place had Salah's period when he was sort of bedding in and playing well but missing loads of chances, we're drawing loads of games. Had he stuck away a few of those, then we probably would have been clear in second place. But I mean, that's the pass.
Cressy, we're running short on time. Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, thank you so much, and have a lovely day.
You too. Have an amazing...
I'm a happy man.
Good. That's what we like to hear. You take care.
All right. Thank you.
So that was our second caller, Cressy, making new rules for the FA. If anyone's listening, hire him, sign him up. We could certainly fix some of those problems with the officials. We're going to move on to our third caller, somebody I know pretty well. I see him at the games. He's pretty awesome. Also an AI Pro subscriber. It's Mr. Jamal Tarazi. Welcome to the show again, Jamal.
Thank you so much, Nina. I'm excited to be on.
It's great to have you on. I'm sure you've got some great insight, great points that you'd like to raise with the panel. So, Jamal, you know what? We've held you on quite enough, so I'm going to give you the floor now.
All right. I just Well, first of all, I'd just like to say happy 7th anniversary to AI. I wanted to thank really everyone involved with it. I feel my life, at least the portion of it that deals with football in general, has been much, much richer since I've been an avid listener. So thank you.
Too kind.
Okay. What I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on was maybe a noticeable tactical shift that I see in Liverpool. And maybe I'm making up a story and it's not there, but that's why I wanted to ask about it. I feel like the team is now playing a much slower and deliberate game. They're sort of happy to camp on, you know, their side of the pitch, not the opposition's side of the pitch. It's as if they've conceded the ball and just waiting for that time to spring a really good a counterattack. And maybe that wasn't clear to me in the Tottenham game, because Tottenham is actually such a strong team and they like to play on the front foot. They like to press their opposition. So at least to me, that wasn't clear. But against Southampton, you know, that at least makes me want to ask that question.
Great point to ask, actually. Andy, I'm going to come to you. I mean, did you feel like we kind of took the foot off the gas? And we, you know, the first goal, certainly, I mean, it came from that sort of counter, you know, the counter-attacking football. Do you think there's a time in a game? I know, you know, we're in a WhatsApp group and a lot of people are getting frustrated that why aren't Liverpool scoring like a few more goals? Why aren't we killing them? They're dreadful. They're poor. But do you, and in the second half, certainly, it seemed like a more mature performance, a bit more measured. Your thoughts on that? Do you think it's something that Klopp has in mind, or do you think maybe it could be the fact that we have a game midweek as well?
Possibly. It could even be that we were setting ourselves ahead for working on a game plan that we're going to look to execute midweek against Porto. I think some of the frustration today not finishing them off was that we had some good chances that we really should have finished. And I think while it's two, there's always that you know, glimmer of hope for them. But
three,
you know,
is enough for us. Let's be honest.
yeah, we've had that too many times. But I think a third goal would have really killed them off. And I think that's just what we needed for our nerves, because we've seen it so many times. We've seen us capitulate too often that we still don't feel comfortable even at a 2-0 lead. But I think a third goal would have killed them off, and that would have made life a lot more comfortable for us. I think my issue today was really how sloppy we were with possession. I really feel we were sloppy on the ball. We were conceding play far, far too easily. And it certainly wasn't a deliberate thing. It was happening all over the pitch. It just wasn't quite clicking around the pitch. You know, the final third, everything, the ball just wasn't quite good enough. So in terms of the tactical approach, yeah, it did feel to me that we were kind of setting them up, looking to draw them out a little bit more. It might have just been that deliberate thing of what we were looking to do was create some space in behind them to run at them. I expected them to be a lot more compact and probably sit a little bit deeper and deny us the space to play. I was surprised the way that Southampton played, started the game off. There was a lot of space between all the defenders, the way they set themselves out. They really spread themselves open. And it kind of invited us to chase them down and win the ball. And then if we win the ball, suddenly they're trying to get back into a tighter unit. And we've got that space to run into with the players that we've got. We love that. So I was kind of surprised at the way they set themselves up initially. But you could see through the game, we weren't always pressing them around the back line. We were almost kind of letting them come onto us a bit more, and then as we were getting close, they were getting closer to the halfway line, then we would start to spring the press and we would start to work them down. And obviously not all their players are quite so comfortable at moving the ball around and one touch passing, so we were getting mistakes out of them, and that's where we were hitting our counters, and that's where that frustration came, because we had the opportunities to finish them off and we weren't taking them. It was first half, though, for me, it wasn't so much of, you know, tactically we were sitting back and bringing them into us. it was, we were conceding possession far, far too easily. Whenever we were winning the ball, you know, it was 2-3 passes, we were losing it again. We were making some bad decisions, and we were sometimes our touch and our pass was really, really poor. And I think we've got to really sharpen ourselves up on Wednesday night. You know, I'd hope that it's just a bit of a blip, and this was, you know, perhaps that some of the players playing a little bit with Wednesday in mind, you know, one eye on the next game, playing in the Champions League, with it being such a big occasion, that the concentration level wasn't quite there. But yes, second half, we still had our sloppy moments, but I think our shape was better. We were a bit more disciplined in the way that we nullified what they were trying to do to us. And again, we're always a threat on the counter-attack. But I think... we did it against Spurs, where we got the early goal and we were looking to try and sucker Spurs in and try and open up them spaces in behind teams, which was what we really like to play into. And Spurs obviously are a better team at doing it. We had the chance to finish Spurs off in the first half last week. We didn't do it. We ended up getting punished for it. And obviously we can talk about all of that, you know, the validity of all the goals and all the rest of that. But we got punished because we didn't finish teams off. Today, we didn't get punished for being wasteful with our chances. But I think midweek, if we are as wasteful with our chances and we are as wasteful in possession, you know, we can play this, you know, setting up the traps all we like and looking to play this counter-attacking football. If we are so sloppy in possession and so wasteful with our chances midweek against a team like Porto, I think they will punish us. So hopefully we'll take some lessons from it. But I do wonder whether or not there was a little bit of working on the game plan ready for that Porto game.
Interesting points there. And Cousy, I'm going to come straight to you. I think Andy's highlighted some really important parts there. You know, some of the passing was slow. I felt like we were slow on the second ball. I felt like there were easy chances presented in the second half, where in the first half, the attack was basically the thing that we were all raving about, where we just looked so threatening every time we had the ball on the counter. In the second half, we were just missing the most easiest things. Your thoughts on whether this is a measured approach from Klopp now, maybe not going full gung-ho in every game for full 90 minutes, maybe reserve and, you know, be a bit more conservative, maybe hold on to that energy, knowing that he doesn't have the depth of squad and players?
I think it's trying to make the team a bit more intelligent in terms of, yeah, I mean, it can't always be hell for leather, full out, 100% energy throughout the entire match.
You've got to hold on to a small lead. You've got to learn to hold on to like a 1-0 now and then.
It's a tactical approach that I think he's trying to employ when we do take leads. I don't think it's quite what we're getting in some of these games, though. So second half against Tottenham, for example, where I think there was a spell of about 10, 15 minutes where we had 15% possession. After the game, And in interviews since then, Klopp has said that we stopped playing football in the second half against Tottenham, and that was his biggest sort of disappointment, that we stopped playing football. So that says to me is that although we want to take a more measured approach, it doesn't mean giving the ball away after every second pass.
Yes.
We still need to keep in good possession. You want to control the game by having a good piece of possession of the ball. You can't really control the game when you're having 10-15% possession. And I don't think we're a team with the personnel set up to concentrate for long periods without the ball. So I get a bit worried when we're trying to just sort of sit deep and we can't get any sort of possession, even against a team like Southampton, who aren't at the moment very good. Even against a team like that, you tend to worry and get a bit anxious. Because, you know, there's usually a mistake around the corner with this Liverpool side. It's a good thing we didn't get that today. But as Andy said, against a team like Porto in the Champions League, or if we were to get further, you know, we'd really get punished. So although, you know, I don't think the team can go all out throughout a game and attack, it does need to be much better when trying to control it. We do have to control the ball. We have to be much better in possession. The decision making has to be a lot better, a lot more acute than it is at the moment. There were some sloppy passes today, man. It was a lot of balls going out for throw-ins or almost out for throw-ins, and easy passes just being behind teammates and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the stat sheet, it looks as if it's a completed pass, but we all can tell when a pass has been a poor one. And there was a lot of those today. It just needs to be better. Against Southampton, when you 2-0 up, it's not that important. You know, the 3 points is in the bag, but against better opposition in the Champions League, where most teams are very switched on tactically, concentration levels in the Champions League are usually quite high. We cannot, you know, be performing like that in midfield areas against this quality of opposition. I think we'll get punished. So I definitely agree with Andy on that one. But I think the team, you know, needs to control, but needs to keep the ball better, much better.
Fair enough. And Jamal, I'm going to come back to you. So you weren't seeing things. The lads, partly agree with what you've kind of said there. I'd let you have the final thought before we let you go.
Yeah, no, I think those are good points. You know, we missed a lot of chances. We were, you know, loose in possession, at least when we had the ball. You know, Kazi makes a point that we're always worried when we're sitting deep and trying to absorb pressure. But I think, at least for me, these last two games, I feel as if there's a, like, kind of a Virgil factor, right? Where maybe he's just organizing things a little bit better. I feel a little bit more comfortable when I look at the team absorbing pressure, than before Virgil was there for those last two games. Even against Tottenham, right, with the way we conceded those two goals, one was whatever, 30-yard worldly. The other one was a pen. So, yes, they do, you know, teams do put us under pressure, but it's almost as if he's playing differently now that Virgil is part of his team. So we'll see. No. All right. Thank you very much.
No, awesome points. Thank you so much, Jamal. Enjoy the very little left of the weekend, and hopefully it's an awesome week for us all.
Absolutely. Thank you. Up the Reds.
Take care. Thank you, Jamal. Okay, so that was Jamal, our final caller on the Nina Kauza Show. I can't believe it's been way over an hour, and we've not discussed the two front men and their goals. So you know what? That's exactly what I'm going to do with Cuzzy and Wales. So Cuzzy, I'm going to come to you first on the first goal. So quick in transition, the counter-attack football, just amazing. Great vision from Mo Salah. Talk to me about that, the link-up play and everything. I actually felt a little bad because I almost thought personally that it was going to fall to Mane. I was like, you're the most unluckiest man in that attack.
I had the impression that Firmino sort of gave Mane the hand. Like, oh, no. You're not going anywhere near this. I'm gonna slot home. And I was glad because before Mane is in, he probably would have skied it. So it was a funny game because although, you know, we've been a bit critical of the performance, it's a game we could have won 6-7-8-0. Mm. You know, we weren't sort of at our dominant best, but there were a lot of isolated moments where the quality of our forward players got us into some really good opportunities to score. And the first goal was a lovely bit of play from Salah, and the way he squared it, the finish is beautiful. The second goal is a peach. Just the ball from Matip, and again, last time I was on, I think I gave Matip man of the match. I can't remember what game it was now. It was these games are coming so thick and fast, but the game before last, I can't remember which one it was.
I think it was Huddersfield.
I gave Matip man of the match for his vertical passes into feet and creating chances. He done it again for the second goal. Beautiful bit of play from Salah, and then the cheeky spinning back heel, and then the finish was lovely. Yeah, it's funny that we've been on for over an hour and we've not discussed the front players yet. I think we're taking them for granted now, Firmino and Salah. The form, the link-up play between the two of them and the form that both of them are showing at the moment is just fantastic. I'm just hoping that neither get in any injuries and they just keep that form going because, you know, the quality of those two at the moment, we can be a bit iffy, we can have sort of a not great game and still win against majority of the opposition. So, yeah, they were both fantastic for those goals.
Absolutely. And before I go to Andy, because I got to ask you, you wrote an article about Roberto Firmino. Is he doing what you want him to do?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, people saw the title of the article and immediately assumed it was negative. It was negative. But, you know, it's true. You know, I want him to give that sort of production, and I know he can do it. We've had lots of conversations over the last couple of years on these post-match shows where, although I'm a fan of Firmino, I've always said I wanted more because I think he can produce it. So the sort of numbers that I thought he could produce, I think he can get 20 league goals. You know, I think he's definitely in his locker. He's done it before. And it's definitely in his locker. I think he could do it this season. He can get 30 in all competitions. And he can be statistically the striker. A lot of people who maybe want a traditional number nine, you know, he can produce. He can produce those numbers, I think. And in, and for us to be successful, for us to win the big prizes, if we want to win a league title or a Champions League, I think he would need to hit those numbers, even with the likes of Salah scoring loads of goals and Mane. But with Phil gone, you know, there's not that many players in your side that's going to score a lot of goals. So there's the players that can hit the net. You just want them to sort of maximize their, you know, their opportunities. And I think he's got the ability to do that. And he's doing so this season, as the statistics say.
Absolutely. And Andy, I'm going to come to you, your thoughts on those goals, because they were absolutely stunning. I mean, we kind of criticized the attackers for missing easy chances, but those goals today scored, beautiful.
Yeah, I love the finish on the first one. Just so clean and crisp. You know, it, just the way they were on it so early on. It gave you the hope that, you know, any chance we were going to get, we were going to bury, you're going to really put them to it. And it was that thing, you know, the first half, we that first 5 minutes, bang, we got the goal from nothing. Beautiful finish. Then we had like half an hour, 35 minutes of really sloppy play, almost, you know, inviting Southampton to get into the game, you know, as though we felt sorry for them. We really wanted them to make a game of it. And we were trying to engineer something for them. And then bang, out of nothing again, beautiful little interplay. I just, that little flick from Firmino is just, I know there's nobody else in our team. And I'm not convinced there's anybody else in the Premier League who's audacious enough to do that flick that he does in the way that he does it. He's just got something beautifully mad, and it's like a mad professor on the pitch at times. He's fantastic. He didn't have his best game today. Look, you know, some of his touches and everything were really off, but them little moments of magic are just fantastic, and I love that. And the thing is with Salah, is you do feel confident he's going to slot it away. And he takes it so well. I know he's missed a couple of chances afterwards. You know, second half, missed a couple of really good chances for him. One in particular, he absolutely should have buried. But, you know, they're 1v1s on a goalkeeper. You're just convinced he's going to score every single time. You know, 29 goals in all competitions so far this season. It's just mind-blowing for a guy that's supposed to be a winger. But the way them two are linking up, and you could see the embrace after that second goal. Those two just click on the pitch, and they obviously get on really well. And I think a positive to come out of things as well is, although Sadio Mane's, I think it's quite clear that his confidence isn't there at the moment. He's not firing on all cylinders, but he's still trying. He's still working away. He's doing all the basics. He's working to be an effective member of the team. I think once his confidence comes back and he gets that swagger in his game again, you know, you just think it's not just them two up front, it's him as well. And, you know, I'm hoping it'll come at just the right time. And maybe on Wednesday night we can see Sadio bag a couple of goals. And then that's it then. You know, imagine the three of them firing on all cylinders through to the end of the season. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Having such wonderful players who you know, who seem to exist on a different stratosphere to everybody else in the attacking third of the pitch like that. So it's beautiful. Really good goal. So the second, yeah, magic.
Look at that. Happy customers. Guys, I think we're pretty much coming to the end of this episode of the Nina Kauser Show. Want to get your man of the match. It'll be quite interesting, actually, to see which way you guys go. So, you know what? Cuzzy, I'll come to you first. Who's your man of the match?
Oh, this is a tough one. No one stood out for me as being consistently really good throughout the game. But if I'm pressed, might give it to Mo Salah. I didn't think he was superb throughout the game, but just moments, decisive moments that he produced, I think won the game for us. So I would, I'd give it to him, but I think he should share some of the champagne with Karius, because those saves were huge. Well, the one big save, the one that I mentioned earlier, was huge. And I think if that goes in, it's a completely different game. So a special mention to him as well. I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about how good Van Dijk was. Mm-hmm. And they're probably right, but I don't know. I didn't see him make that much of an impact. Maybe because, you know, he was so good in what he was doing, he was just making it look so easy that I didn't quite notice. But a lot of people seem to think Van Dijk had a great game. But yeah, I'm going to give it to Salah, and with the honourable mention for Karius.
Amazing. I think Andy, I'll come to you first. Secondly, who was your man of the match?
Well, I was close to giving it to Karius again. We gave him it last week, and I was close to giving it again because, as Cousin mentioned, you know, when we needed him, he really pulled it out.
Mm.
But I am going to give it to Van Dijk as to Van Dijk just edging Karius out for this, because I just thought Van Dijk really bossed that back line. And, you know, you think the pressure, all the focus that was on him, the attention that was on him, the crowd were on him, you know, the big money move, he's coming back to St. Mary's. Everything was about him, and that performance was so calm, so assured. He just took it in his stride. He looked like he was actually enjoying the fact that everyone
was calling him a wanker.
Yeah. You know, that they were trying to get at him and players around him. He was just smiling. He was laughing it off. I actually think he was enjoying himself. And it's such a jump for us, I think, because we've got so many players that, you know, when they're put under pressure, tend to crumble or have, you know, kind of lose their heads a bit, you know, become so emotional, they lose their heads and get, you know, caught up in the whole situation. He breezed through that. I mean, that striker they were talking about, the Argentine striker, Correa, he just had him on toast. He didn't get a single bit of change out of him. He looked comfortable throughout. So I'll say Van Dijk, given the situation and everything that was riding on it, I'd say Van Dijk just edges out Lloris Karius.
You know what? You've pretty much nicked all my points why people were probably highlighting Van Dijk and all those reasons that you mentioned there as well. And I remember Liverpool played Southampton about two seasons ago, and we just signed Lallana from them that summer. And I remember it was raining at St. Mary's and he was getting booed, Lallana, and you could see tears. He was crying. So, you know, the fact that you're mentioning that, like, the mental strength and, you know, him enjoying that game out there and just keeping a cool, calm head, it's definitely an asset that we should, you know, really be proud of, because I feel like we don't have that many characters who players who have that character. So, yep, I think I'm going to go with Virgil van Dijk as well for those reasons. Guys, thank you so much. A massive thank you to our callers who were absolutely amazing. A massive thank you to Andy and Cousy, but before they go, do they have anything to plug? Cousy, I'm going to come to you. Do you want to tell people about this article?
Yeah, you've done a nice slight plug there in the earlier segment just now. So, wrote an article on Firmino last week. It would be great if you went and had a read. Don't read too much into the title. It's not a negative article. It's actually quite positive, really. Just need to have a read. It's on the site. Is called Roberto Firmino Needs to Deliver More. But yeah, don't read too much into the title. Go in it and have a good read. I'm working on a couple more articles to come out. One slightly interesting one is about Liverpool's best performances under Klopp. And I'm going to try and narrow it down to five games and sort of talk about sort of how we felt, how the games went and what have you. So,
are they going to be best in terms of flawless performances? Mind you, we don't have flawless performances, or just like heart attack football?
Not really. Just, you know, in terms of, it could be flawless, or it could just be your favorite match.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do a poll and on Twitter and get people's opinions on what their favorite games were and what our better performances were, and then shortlist it to five, and then do a bit of a piece around that. So I think that'll be interesting. So you guys feel free to contribute your ideas to that as well. And I hope to have that done within the next week or so.
Absolutely. I just hope the Dortmund game's in there. Just my little slide plug there. It was just madness, that game. Andy, coming over to you. I believe you did a Champions League pod. I know you did, because I edited it. So feel free to plug that, because it was an excellent listen.
Yeah, it's as we said, you know, Liverpool's next game is Champions League, huge match away to Porto Wednesday night. So yeah, did a preview of that match with the man of 1,000 podcasts, Guy Drinkle, and Portuguese football analyst for Football Radar, Jamie Farr, who gave us some great insight into Porto, how they set themselves up, kind of things that Liverpool can expect, and you know, just a look at the type of game it's going to be. It was an interesting discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, really good preview. Not too long, so about 30 minutes of your time. So please do give it a listen ahead of huge night on Wednesday night, a huge game, I should say, on Wednesday night for Liverpool.
Absolutely. I can't recommend that pod enough. Do check out both of these guys' work. For my part, I'm doing Anfield Index TV now. It's definitely a regular thing. Guys, if you're listening and you have a YouTube channel, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's Anfield Index. Pretty simple. Support me. I love doing those videos. It'd be great to get your feedback, what kind of videos I should do. And my second plug would be for AI Pro. It is absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely great content. Legends, journalists, under pressure, fan media. There is everything. It is $4.99 a month, $49.99 annually. 7-day free trial. All you got to do is go to anfieldindex.com/join, and it's even better now, much more simpler, because you can even subscribe via the app. So there you go, no excuses. So that's my plug. I'm just thrilled we won. We've got a massive game midweek. Let's hope the Reds absolutely have an incredible week. Until next time, up the Reds.
Podcast Network.